Welcome to Let's Talk Loyalty, an industry podcast for loyalty marketing professionals. I'm your host, Paula Thomas, and if you work in loyalty marketing, join me every week to learn the latest ideas from loyalty specialists around the world. This episode is brought to you by Epsilon and their award-winning PeopleCloud loyalty solution. Epsilon has actually just released a guide on the topic of contactless loyalty, which explores how marketeers can create human-like connections with their customers in an increasingly contactless world. I would highly recommend you have a look, so to download the guide, visit emea.epsilon.com/letstalkloyalty and you'll find the guide in the resources section. So welcome to episode 65 of Let's Talk Loyalty. And today I am delighted to be interviewing Paul Smitten, who is very well known, I think, all around the world in terms of his loyalty career, currently working as CEO of Asia Miles, based out of Hong Kong, but with an extraordinary career that we're going to go through, which spans, I believe, in excess of 20 years. So first and foremost, Paul Smitten, welcome to Let's Talk Loyalty.
Thank you, Paula. Happy to be your 65th. Guest on the show. Well done.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And for listeners, I should explain with the busy travel season, I hope, coming up for myself, if nobody else. We're recording, in fact, in middle of November to release in mid-December. So by the time this goes out on air, we should probably be wishing people happy Christmas. But anyway, I won't get ahead of myself. Great. So, Paul, first and foremost, as you know, we start every show really trying to understand from senior people in the industry, what is your favorite loyalty statistic?
Look, Paula, there's so many. I love some of the stats that come out of this industry. It's really, really fascinating. Some of the engagement indicators that we get, some of the links between spend behavior and you know, what goes on to happen in terms of future engagement, especially when they take a reward. But there's one stat that I just love, and this goes back to many years ago actually, and I, one of the airlines that I worked with, we had this great stat very much from the very beginning, right when someone joined the program. We used to ask a whole lot of interest data about customers, and one of them was just a very simple question around when they travel, where do they like to sit? And if they said window seat or aisle seat, it became this massive predictor of future behavior. And so without any insight, any actual transaction behavior at all, we could predict what someone would go on and become with pretty high certainty. It was sort of a ratio of 2-1.
Wow.
No surprise when you really dig into it. It's kind of pretty obvious, actually, with the benefit of hindsight. But people who say window seat tended to be leisure travellers, and people who said aisle tended to be business travellers. Now, there's no sort of major rocket science behind that, but it's basically a simple premise that business travellers want to sit at the front of the plane in an aisle seat and get off and get to their destination quickly.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Wonderful. That from a loyalty program, then if you didn't ask that question, you wouldn't know what that future was like. So just a fun little stat. As I say, there's so many stats. I love it. And I know, maybe just very quickly, there's another one I really love, which is when customers get a reward quickly in a program, they tend to go on and be much, much more valuable in terms of future behavior, right? They almost like get the concept, see the value. And then they go on to become really loyal customers after that. So I love things like that. Often referred to as sort of a golden moment in a program.
Yeah.
And you get that early on. So that's a really neat moment in a program. And it's something that, as any program operator, you should always be looking for.
Yes.
Making sure that your program promise is being fulfilled.
Absolutely. It's a great one to start with, Paul. And I think I said to you off air the last time we spoke, actually, I remember in my own British Airways days, we called it the Rocket Blues. So it was just identifying that cohort, which really wasn't getting the tier benefits or the recognition, but was on a trajectory that meant actually they should be really treated almost as a separate segment. So I love that you identified it purely from the choice of seating, because because I remember when I went from that, you know, just traveling back and forth, for example, to Dubai myself and, you know, wanting a window seat. And then it was just like, oh, you know, I'm done with that now. I just need to be able to get in and out of the bathroom.
Yes, exactly.
Great stuff. Yeah. Well, that's a brilliant one to get started with, Paul. And actually, I also like your second one there about speed to reward. And I was listening back to a couple of my old episodes myself recently. And I also did an interview with the AA Advantage Program. And we were talking about KPIs. And in fact, one of the key KPIs they do measure is speed of engagement from the moment of enrollment to the speed of engagement. So I can hear that's the same kind of insight that you're focused on in terms of your perspective.
Yes, very much so. It's, you know, I think with any reward program that works well, and there's a lot of reward programs out there that I don't think do a great job, right? They sometimes end up being disloyalty because they create a promise that doesn't get fulfilled. Mm-hmm. You know, end up doing more harm for the business than good. So it's really important that, you know, you see customers earning and getting rewards. And the sooner that happens, the sooner they feel the benefit of participation, right?
Yeah.
And that's when you start to see a lot of magic happening. So
wonderful.
For me, you know, things like expiry is an important factor. If that's too high, then that is an indication that you've got a low engagement program. So
yeah.
You know, I talk to a lot of other companies and with their own programs, and they're hooked on that drug of expiry. And so that they're really under-investing in their proposition and they're wondering why it's not working.
Yeah.
And so when we talk to them about you know, maybe joining the Asia Miles Coalition, you know, sometimes the cost can be a barrier. They go, well, it's costing me more. And it's like, well, that's because we're actually delivering on the reward promise.
Wow.
You know, if we're looking at it from a purely a cost perspective, you know, then you're missing the point, right? If you're relying high breakage models.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting perspective on the program. So you get what you sow.
Totally. Yeah, it's probably a pet peeve of mine, actually, Paul, you know, having gone into plenty of meetings where people are like, you know, convince me that I need a loyalty program. And I'm like, no, I think this is not the right question to start with. This is not my job to convince you. And I like that you use the word drug, actually, Paul, because, you know, it really has to, it has to have the integrity. And I've said this 100 times on the show before, and I can see actually a lot of the work you've done in terms of writing about loyalty and talking about loyalty, it really is showing up for the customer and making sure that they get to engage with you in the way that you've promised them to.
Yeah, absolutely. If you think about a reward program, the whole concept of joining it is that you're after a reward, right? That's the program promise.
Yeah.
You know, without laboring the point, if you're not delivering on that, that's the critical moment. That's the net promoter score moment.
Yeah.
Where I've saved and saved and saved, and now I've got some. That's when you either make them feel like their experience is better than their expectation, or it's worse.
Yeah.
And so, and that's sort of, you know, obviously the behavioral aspect of getting the reward is one thing, but then the emotional side of it, the net promoter aspect, you know, how do they feel now that they've done that? You know, was it easy?
Yeah.
Did they get what they wanted first time?
Yeah.
All those sort of considerations come into how the program actually delivers on that promise.
Absolutely.
So it's the range of reward. How long did it take to get there?
Yeah.
Those things, and then accessibility, availability, all those things start coming into how people feel about the reward. And that then leads to ongoing future engagement if you get that right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know about you, Paul, but my own sense is I almost, maybe it's like having a child, you know, you almost forget about the pain of the earning process, you know, if the redemption process is good enough, you know, because there's where the long-term memory comes in, you know, that's where the joy comes from. So, you know, I think it's perfectly fine to make people wait in terms of earning the reward, you know, would you agree?
Yeah, there is. It's, I'm not going to be able to rightly compare childbirth to as an observer to childbirth.
Me too.
I can see that, you know, it is obviously a painful process, but then there's a lot of enjoyment at the other end. So, so we won't labour that analogy too far. it is a bit like that. And actually, there's a lot of research that says that, you know, if customers take a cashback type reward program, and they're sort of just transacting and then they're getting a cashback at the till, whilst that's attractive in terms of simplicity and ease of use, it doesn't necessarily lead to better and longer term engagement. So there's something about saving and building up for a higher order goal.
Yeah.
And even if it ends up being, you know, a reward like a cash card or a voucher that you can use in a store, that's still better, right, than something that just happens as a, you know, get $1 off or $2 off a transaction as a sort of everyday.
Yeah.
And so I one of the programs I worked with, a grocery program a few years ago, they actively tried to discourage customers from taking the redemption at the checkout. That was largely because they saw that the program customers ended up being less engaged and almost felt like some regret, buyer's remorse, having used the points in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes actually, whilst it's maybe utilitarian, it looks like it should be a good thing, and you ask customers and they go, would you like to be able to do this? And they go, yeah, that'd be great.
Totally.
The reality of what actually happens in terms of engagements is sometimes different. So that's where, I guess, loyalty marketing professionals, we need to think about, you know, the balance between what the customer asks, what they think they want, and what you think is best for them.
Yeah.
So it's often a balance between the two, right, is the right answer. So you do want, you want to make it easy, but, you know, I do know for a fact that if people save for something that's higher order, you get a better return. But, you know, obviously you don't want them to save for too long, right? So that's a sort of divisibility of the reward as well. If it's going to take many, many years to get somewhere, then that's going to lead to, you know, lack of engagement long term. So I think there's something around, you know, finding that sweet spot. In the program, the Asia Miles program is typically, you know, almost 2 years that people build a balance and they save up and then they redeem, right?
Interesting. Now, absolutely. That's
not a bad time frame for for something like a holiday.
Yeah.
So getting away on a plane somewhere, that's quite cool. Mm. We are looking at things. We recently launched back in January, kind of what we call a miles plus cash option as well.
Right.
So customers in their booking on Hong Kong Express, for example, they can use their miles to part pay for a reward.
Mm.
Things like that allows you to get there a bit quicker, and that's not bad. But again, it's still saving up for and using.
So
I think that's the sweet spot.
Yeah, love it. Great. And I think I mentioned at the start you're over 20 years in loyalty, but I think my maths is wrong. I think it might be 30. I don't want to age you, Paul. But I saw a brilliant piece of history on your LinkedIn profile, which showed me that you joined Air New Zealand as a graduate trainee and did obviously a spectacular 2 years in that trainee role, and were then promoted to head of loyalty for Air New Zealand. Literally after, straight from trainee. I think it's the biggest promotion I've ever heard of. You've got to tell us the story.
Yeah, look, I liked the way you thought about it initially, Paul. I think 20 years sounds much better. You're very old. But if I go back to that that role, I did join in New Zealand as a graduate trainee out of university.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a trainee program. It was all good fun. And then one fine day, the chief commercial officer at in New Zealand, who was sort of my sponsor into the business, because I came from a commercial course, and he said, "Look, I need someone to come in and help set up a loyalty program. We haven't got one. Can you come and help me do this?"
Wow.
So it was. Yeah, it was kind of a pretty bit of a crazy thing. And what they actually said to me was, we've just heard in the market that Qantas are about to launch their first loyalty program, and we really don't want to be in market with that one.
Mm.
So, can you come and help do it? And you need to do it in 4 weeks.
Oh, my word. Wow.
So I remember at the time, obviously it was pre-internet, so it was pretty hard to do research. And I was in New Zealand, so a long way from other programs. And so I did a lot of research, picked brochures, things like that.
Wow.
So actually the old member guidebooks that used to be existed, printed books that talked about how to earn points, how to redeem, and all the terms and conditions that were produced. Yeah, so I managed to get a bunch of those. The one that I ended up kind of modeling the program on was the Continental OnePass program. Continental ended up being acquired by United and the program merged into Mileage Plus. But yeah, so going way back, that was the program that I sort of used as the model. And because I only had those 4 weeks, I didn't have time to do anything that you normally do. No IT systems, no branding, no customer service stuff, no nothing.
So it
ended up, we ran 2 weeks over the deadline.
Okay.
And the program from nothing to launched in 6 weeks. And so people talk about being agile and minimum viable product as a sort of a new concept, but gee, that was that on steroids. So the program, was up and running, and then off we went. So I was lucky enough to really grow with it. So I ended up, hiring marketing teams, operations teams, IT teams, partnership teams, everything that you need. In the first 18 months, I was kind of doing very much an operational role during the day, dealing with customer issues, because you can imagine
totally
launched that quickly.
Yeah,
there was no time to really get everything in place, and then in the evenings I was kind of catching up and doing all the other stuff. So I was kind of doing 100 hours every week for about 18 months. It was crazy.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
But, yeah, so it was good fun. So baptism of fire. So I started off not even knowing. I mean, I remember someone saying we need an FFP, and I went, "What's that stand for?"
Wow.
So it was quite interesting baptism. And so, and then that really defined my whole career. So
totally,
really moment of luck, in terms of that phone call from the chief commercial officer.
Wow.
There you go. I could probably waffle on about that for a while.
Aww.
That might be a podcast in itself, because it was an incredible experience.
For sure. I love it, Paul, though. But I mean, there was obviously an aptitude that you had. As you said, you were already in a commercial mindset, I suppose, from a university perspective, to be able to come in and figure out even the operations. And again, I've largely worked on the operational side of loyalty programs. That in itself is extraordinarily challenging. But to get to where you are today in terms of CEO of Asia Miles, and, I know you have a very strong background in terms of understanding all the technology and all the customer insights. So extraordinary work going on with Asia Miles. And you mentioned earlier a bit about the change in strategy for Asia Miles. So I think you're moving away from the lifespan of miles with Asia Miles and into more of an activity-based structure. So I'd love to hear a bit about that change you've made to the program.
Yeah, sure. Look, we, up until the end of last year, the program rules were that we had a fixed life of a point, from earning date to expiry date, it was 3 years.
Mm.
So from 1 January this year, all new miles that are earned are in an activity-based regime. So we have an 18-month rule. So as long as you maintain some sort of activity on your account in that 18-month period, then your miles keep active, right?
Mm.
And so that was a business case last year that we put together and then, got it signed off, and then did all the technology behind the scenes to get ready for it, launched it for 1st of January. So actually, to be honest, it was a really good thing to have done, because what it means now is that, in the current environment, people maybe less flying activity are to keep active in other ways. So that's Really cool. And it was a personal bugbear of mine, in that the program was, you know, had that fixed life of a point.
Yeah.
I think activity-based is much, much more customer-centric.
I agree.
You have people that are saving up for, you know, bigger rewards, maybe trip of a lifetime type thing, and you know, now you can do that. So I think that was really cool.
Yeah.
So, that was a big change. And luckily enough, we put that in, you know, we got that business case signed off, and then, you know, COVID hit. So it was quite good timing in a way.
Mm.
There was a few other changes we made to the program, which also were quite good, well-timed as well.
Okay.
So, again, benefit of hindsight, they all came in pre-COVID.
Okay.
So that we pulled it, put in the whole Adobe stack. So we got all the full personalization, digitization around you know, member engagements, whether it be Adobe Experience Manager, Adobe Campaign, Adobe Target, all those tools. So it allowed us to be really targeted, relevant to customers with their marketing messaging. Also took the opportunity into last year again to replace the e-commerce store. So we had a old technology. We put in a leading edge piece of technology around SAP with hybrid. And so, you know, again, put that in place, launched it last year. There was a lot of changes in the last year.
Wow.
Having that through this year has been really powerful because not as much flight redemption happening.
Yeah.
So non-air redemptions become really important because people can use miles for, you know, whether it was the iPhone 12 that was launched recently. That was a regular redemption item.
Sure.
Redeeming for first class wine, all sorts of stuff happening that, you know, if we didn't have that commerce in play, we wouldn't have been in a great place in COVID. So,
Well,
those, done you. Those, it was good. I wish it was sort of COVID planning, right? But it was happened to be that we got them in pre-COVID and then they've been really valuable over the last 10 months or so.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness for that. As you said, nobody can, you know, really have any, you know, foresight of something like this. And even like I've spoken to a few friends of mine in the airline business around the world about, you know, business continuity planning, but it was always really, I suppose, from a safety point of view. So, you know, as an airline, obviously it's core to the business and everyone thinks about it every day. But I don't think anyone in the industry had really planned for something that would ground the airline that wasn't safety related, you know, in terms of the aircraft safety. So, from a loyalty perspective, nobody had thought about this kind of thing. So I'm super happy that you had everything in place.
Yeah, it's interesting. We as a loyalty business, separate to the airline business, you know, we didn't predict a global pandemic, right?
Yeah,
I'm not going to say we were that clever.
Yeah.
But we did, you know, think about, we have our own risk plan. We've, you know, it's quite separate to the airline.
Okay.
We ran, you know, we've always run that for the last couple of years, at least in my, during my tenure.
Yeah.
Looking at vulnerability and impact. And so things like revenue concentration as a risk item was up.
Okay. Okay.
For pre-COVID.
Okay.
You know, like reward range, you know, was up. So how do we diversify? So actually, even though we didn't predict the pandemic, some of the risks that we'd identified and the mitigation plans that we'd put in place meant that, you know, we were in a better place to deal with.
You had a plan. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, a plan. So it wasn't impossible.
Okay.
We also did quite a bit of, and we continue to do, working with our PR agency, crisis handling. So, you know, from a loyalty business perspective, and some of those things were more around, you know, what happens if there's a data breach, you know, how would we handle that? You know, things like that, those sorts of things that are pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But they're linked to how do you give people confidence and make them feel that you can trust the currency and all that. So some of the, I guess, risk planning and crisis handling kind of scenario planning we'd done actually did help us quite well. So in terms of communications, you know, going into COVID, making sure members realize that, you know, we've got this, you know, it's not You yeah. don't need to worry. You know, you can keep redeeming where you go. It's all fine.
Yeah.
Save for the future. That's fine. You use your miles now. That's fine too.
Okay.
And some airlines, you know, made the decision to say, you know, let's turn off the tap, right?
Yeah.
Stop redemption. And what that does is just creates this negative
totally.
Energy
yeah.
and takes away the trust that members have.
Yeah.
And so when you take trust, when you break that trust, it's mm. very hard to get it back, right?
Mm.
So so we were very confident in our approach and made sure we gave members that confidence as well.
Yeah, that was love it. Yeah. And actually there's a quote that I saw in an article that you wrote, Paul, which I'll just mention for listeners. And it was around this idea, loyalty isn't dead. You just have to earn it, which I thought was lovely, especially in its simplicity, Paul, because there is a lot of concern, I think, particularly about different generations in terms of whether they want to engage. But increasingly what I'm hearing is they just understand the game a lot better than we give them credit for. So they know their data has value. They've seen it with the social media giants. So if you're going to ask for their data now, you know, what are you going to do with it and what's in it for me?
Yeah, and I think that's the same in any generation, really is. So, but you're right. The younger generation probably get to the nub of the issue quite quickly,
yes.
and probably quicker to, yeah, maybe to call bullshit on something if it's not real. Which is fine.
They should, for sure.
Yes. Yeah, so I think that's for me that's what it comes down to. So at the end of the day, is it a customer position that somebody can see value in? If there's a good value exchange, then fine.
Yeah.
If there's not, then you got a problem, right? It's
sure.
it's simple as that. So
yeah.
I think the actual that test, right, is this something that looks and feels right? If it does and you think, well, that's a reasonable value exchange, then fine, right?
Yeah.
It's gonna work.
Yeah.
And if it smells funny and then you start as a team thinking, well, how do we package this?
Yeah.
You're already on the lose, right?
Totally.
You've got to make sure that this value is there. And rewards programs, right? That whole thing about loyalty isn't dead and you have to earn it. For me, it's about trust, right? You've got to earn that over time every single day, right?
Yeah.
That's what the program is all about. How do you make the customer feel that this is an exchange that's worth having. And it's, there's some simple program constructs as well that come from that. You know, you've got to have desirable rewards. You've got to be able to get to those rewards in a reasonable time frame. You've got to make it as pain-free and frictionless as possible when you get there.
Yeah.
So we've been doing things like, okay, people want to redeem online. So how do we make sure the vast majority of them are online? So we're up to 90% now. 90% of our rewards are all redeemed online.
Amazing.
There's a few complex ones where people have to contact the call center because of, complex itineraries and things like that. But generally speaking, it can all be done online and that's what people want. We're just going to be able to set it and use it.
Yeah. And actually, I'm smiling here, Paul, because you've reminded me of a moment yesterday outside of the airline industry, I will say, with my bank, which will remain eternally nameless because I tend to sometimes mention my frustrations with various banks. But exactly to your point, my credit card entitles me to an airport transfer. And for the life of me, I cannot find anyone to tell me how to book it. Like, honestly, I've been on the call center for an hour waiting to book. So that's not loyalty. So I love that you have 90% online. That's brilliant.
Yeah, look, it's funny, isn't it? You see these programs, right? And they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Some of them are just dreadful.
The benefits exist. That's the frustrating thing. I know I'm entitled to it. They know I'm entitled to it. We just can't, seem to plug it together that they can tell me how to avail of it. It's ridiculous.
I had one similar sort of vein where I've been upgraded to their top tier of this program.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. What do I get now? I didn't know what I got before. And I've discovered that there are four levels in this program, and I won't name them to protect the innocent and the guilty. But it was like, okay, great, four tiers, and I'm the top tier. What do I get? And oh my goodness, it's just that this list of, you know, get 10% off here. You know, you got to download this app, show this thing, get this cup.
Wow.
Get 10%. We go, really? Is that, yeah. is that what I get as a your top platinum customer? Like, come on, that's
yeah.
not really worth it. It's a whole lot of effort for a very little benefit. So,
funny.
People wonder why these programs aren't driving engagement and driving loyalty.
So, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Some of the other fabulous stuff you've done, Paul, I know with Asia Miles is quite innovative. And we talked about, for example, I know you've got a chatbot by the name of Samantha. You've got some live chat functionality. And I think you're also exploring various, I suppose, interests that customers are coming through with in terms of wellness. So I'd love to just talk about beyond the basics, because just for listeners, I looked up some of your stats. You've 12 million members. Asia Miles has been running since 1999. You've over 800 program partners and a huge team running it. So plenty of scope to do a lot of exciting stuff. So I'd love to hear about any of it.
Wow. Okay. Big question. Maybe I'll start with Samantha.
Yes, tell
since
us.
The first part. So Samantha or Sam, and not the most innovative name, but we sort of had service at Asia Miles.
Okay.
As Sam. So, okay. Anyway, that was where that name came from.
Okay.
Which is fine. And so she's our sort of, I guess, first line of customer service.
Okay.
And so, you know, some customers want to be able to just self-serve, right? They just want to come on, ask a simple question, get the answer. And so using that AI technology, she's able to help find information for people quite quickly.
Okay.
And so that's been quite well received. So that was launched last year. And so that's...
Can I clarify? Sorry, Paul. Is that for Asia Miles and it's on WhatsApp? Am I right?
So that is on our website and app.
Okay.
So you can... It's like a channel.
A live chat. Getting that.
So I sort of think about it like a pyramid, right? So we have that sort of self-serve, and then if you want to go to the next layer of customer contact, mm-hmm. Something that I can't find easily like that, you then have WhatsApp. So customers love, I don't know about customers in Dubai, but certainly in Asia, Hong Kong, people all over WhatsApp.
Yeah.
It's what sort of live in for most of their messaging.
Totally.
And so we now have that availability, so customers can contact us through WhatsApp.
Amazing.
We also have live chat. You know, it's the same sort of thing. It's just a different channel using a technology that we have in our website and app. Mm. So customers go through live chat or WhatsApp. So we're just trying to be agnostic, let people interact with us. Now, trying to solve for many things like that, and then if it's an even more complex thing, then it can go to a physical call, and typically that's the harder stuff. Like I said before, maybe a multi destination stopover, and I don't know, things like that bit hard to do. So try and free up our contact center agents to be able to, you know, spend time solving more complicated stuff, and free them up from the basic things. And what's great about live chat or WhatsApp is they can do multiple customer handling at once.
Yeah.
So it's that it's quite efficient as well. But it's customers like it as well. So that's going really well.
Yeah.
So that innovation which we brought in, which has gone really well. Mm. We've also done a lot of other things. We've introduced blockchain in the program as a way of helping our some of our smaller partners interact with the program and get miles into customers' accounts more quickly, being quite successful, and you know, making the miles more easily to earn. So it's not Bitcoin, that's blockchain.
Okay. Very important distinction. Thank you. Yes.
More just a back end processing tool to make things quicker, more secure.
Okay.
And efficient. So things like that. You mentioned wellness as well. That's something that we're seeing more and more of, people wanting to earn miles for wellness related activities. So that's something that we're actually, it's a bit of a work in progress. We've got a number of partners in the program already, and we've sort of positioned them and packaged them so that customers can see those.
Great.
And that's, you know, whether it's health insurance or partners like Green. There's a company called Green Common in Hong Kong, which are trying to get people to move from, you know, meat replacement to vegetable protein-based product.
Nice.
So we're promoting things like that. You know, really good for society, but also good for members. We've also have things like you can earn miles for green electricity. So there's sort of general categories like that, which we're sort of trying to build out. We will have more. So the plan is next year. It's kind of a this space, but we're going to double down on that wellness category. We're almost certainly going to, if you look at some of the good examples around the world, and they might, there'll be no surprise, but things like Discovery with Vitality in South Africa and other markets around the world. But it also, you know, before I joined Azure Miles, I was with Qantas, and you know, so wellness was a big play at Qantas. So look, there's a few things that are coming next year in that space, which will make it even more interesting.
Wonderful.
So can't reveal too much yet. We're not ready to launch it.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a sneak preview.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. And it's perfectly, though, aligned, Paul, in terms of, you know, the zeitgeist at the moment. So, you know, I'd be surprised if you weren't thinking along those lines almost. But to go back to what you told us about, just at the start of your answer there, Paul, the WhatsApp piece, I totally love, you know, because, yes, I find live chat very efficient most of the time myself in terms of engaging. But actually, WhatsApp is just where I live in terms of my communications. And I trust it. And I know it's been used very successfully, actually, by airlines over the last number of years. And I really feel it's amazing to see that you guys are leveraging it for that customer service stuff. So just want to acknowledge the innovation and just kind of blazing a trail for customers, because to me, that's true customer centricity. Like, you know, the whole piece around whether it's powered by AI or the blockchain piece that you talked about for merchants, you know, they all sound super, but they don't impact me and I don't feel or see the benefit. But I love the WhatsApp piece.
Yeah, it's great. And you've got, and as you know, right, you have that history as well.
Yeah.
So we're in chat, it's kind of the history is there for the issue, but then it's gone.
Yeah.
Whereas that, you've kind of have that history with the customer too. So it's, it's good.
Yeah.
It's just easy, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting, actually. The other innovation I would mention as well is when we shut down and all started working from home earlier this year within the team, we were like, okay, great, contingency planning, how do we do this? Luckily, you know, pretty much everybody was already on laptop, so they were all fine. There was a few people that didn't, very small number, some of the finance team, for example, some of the admin team. So we very quickly got them laptops as well. So they were up and running. But we were able to work with some of the digital tools. And so in our case, it was Microsoft Teams. And so as an organization, we already had the license, but it was one of those things that was sort of sitting on our laptops, but not really being actively used. But then being to working from home, all of a sudden, that suddenly became a really powerful tool. And what's happened, if I'm perfectly honest, I'd love to say it was all by design, but it was more a beautiful accident in that we found that we've now moved off Outlook as our sort of primary tool to Microsoft Teams based. So there's, you know, lots and lots of team groups, you know, for sharing information. There's team chats, you know, set up for different projects.
Yeah.
We use Microsoft Project extensively. So we have extensively for tracking projects. So we see all these, cards for everything, and all the different owners are able to manage those different things. And so for information sharing, agility, it's great. So that's another thing that we've found from an innovation perspective. It's almost like redesigned the way we work. So it doesn't matter where you are, whether you're at work, home, a coffee shop, whatever floats your boat. you can get stuff done. Right? Sure. And that's been great. So really, really neat. Happy accident, as I say, because of the environment we've found ourselves in.
Yeah.
So we're mostly back at work now, but again,
great.
There's no pressure to be in the office. If you're,
amazing.
If you're in the office, fine. If you're not, it doesn't matter. So I think it's been good getting more stuff done more quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been good.
As I've said once before, never waste a good pandemic. So, you know, I shouldn't make light of it, but, you know, you described yourself before we came on air as a glass half full kind of person. And I like to consider myself the same. So there are improved behaviors in so many areas of life, despite the trauma, obviously, and the difficult times we're going through. So it's amazing to hear that level of agility coming through. So well done you.
Yeah, it's funny. There's that in the never waste a good crisis. It's as you say, we don't want to make light of the situation. In China, there's a concept called Waiji, which is this character that means, it's come to mean, crisis and opportunity all in one.
There you go.
That's I think part of the Chinese culture as well, which is, let's figure out how do we, take the opportunity.
The best. Yeah.
As well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, listen, I've one more question, Paul, and it's actually just, again, something I saw you kind of talking about an online community. I think you have about 6,000 members, and you used a term which I thought was fantastic. This was one of your LinkedIn articles where you described today's choice-rich world, which I just thought was a very succinct way of describing, particularly, I suppose, loyalty, airlines particularly, and obviously what Asia Miles is differentiating. So I'd love to just understand how that community works and, is it something that you use on an ongoing basis or tactically or any insights you can share with me on that side of things?
Yeah, certainly, Paula. It's, it's a big part of how we roll. I can't claim credit for it, but my predecessor was a massive fan of design thinking.
Okay.
One of the leading exponents of that in that space in Asia, and a lot of the team trained up on the D School methodologies at Stanford.
Wow.
A big part of how we roll is design thinking. So, how might we change something? That's sort of how might we question. If you've ever had any design thinking exposure. But yeah, so having a customer panel is a really powerful tool that the team have in thinking about changes. So they're able to engage with the customer panel. They're very much a on tap resource. They're part of our team.
Okay.
So if you think about this, almost like super users, people who understand the program, value it. So we can go to that group, test ideas. Find out what's working well, what's not working well, and that to be a source for new ideas, understand issues, test new ideas before they go out, and that's a big part of it. So that it's a great thing. Every now and then we get people into the office as well as a part of that group, talk to them. So it's really, really useful, because obviously. Yeah, I talk about loyalty not just being about behavioral loyalty.
Yeah.
It's emotional loyalty.
Totally.
Right?
And
we need to know, they might be frequently engaging, so they're behaviorally loyal, but are they emotionally loyal? Are they going to be the kind of customer that sticks around for the long term? And that's where that sort of choice-rich world, where people are able to shop around, choose different things all the time.
Yeah.
Well, what's going to make them feel a little bit better about you? Mm. And I'm not naive enough to think that they're going to be suddenly give us everything all the time. Right.
Yeah.
It's all about just moving the dial, getting more engagement, and just building that over time so that they do feel more connected to you. Mm. And that's going to be good for the customer and good for you as a business.
Mm.
That's where it all comes together.
Yeah, it's a great point, Paul, because yes, I might behave in a loyal way, but it might be because there is no other airline, for example, traveling to where I want to go. So that is definitely not the point of what we're aiming to achieve. So I love that distinction. It's a really good one.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And for us too, it's, we've got 800 program partners. We touched on that before.
Yeah.
12 million. Yeah. That engagement beyond the flying transaction. Mm. How do we make sure the currency is relevant both for the partners, but also for the members? And so how do we extend into other sectors? So we've done that very successfully in financial services, credit cards, banking, insurance,
yeah,
but also into retail, dining, those sort of categories. How do we also understand what's important in those other sectors? So there's a lot of complexity because you need to, it's not just travel, it's other sectors as well.
Yeah.
Can't assume what works in travel is going to work in another sector.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another reason why you need that panel to do that. So, we've done things like we had an integration with the leading table reservation service in Hong Kong, a company called OpenRice. Mm-hmm. And so now you're able to account bind your Asia Miles account to your OpenRice account. And so you earn Asia Miles for each booking of
Brilliant.
A table. And it's also a partner restaurant.
Yeah.
You can earn miles directly from the partner restaurant.
Love it.
And if you use your credit card, you can earn on that as well. So there's kind of like three
Double,
ways. And so
triple dipping. Yeah.
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 Thing. And so, talking to customers, trying to understand the pain points around dining, and then building a UI UX framework that's going to be solve that pain point, is the panel is invaluable.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, to your point earlier, particularly in a year like 2020, when the travel behavior is just impacted, it really does give a unique way for people to stay connected to Asia Miles.
Absolutely.
Spot Wonderful. On, Brilliant. Well, listen, Paul, I have asked everything that I've been dying to ask you. Have you any final closing points from your side before we wrap up?
Oh, no, not really, Paula. Look, it's really fascinating. I love talking to someone who gets loyalty. It's really neat. And, obviously, it's a tough time. And what we're seeing as well is that the currency is still as attractive as ever.
Yeah.
Members love to collect them, miles. I also think there's going to be a real dam burst of demand for travel. I think we're all, whilst it's like Zoom, we're having this chat on Zoom, is fine. It's nothing beats having a chat, face to face. And so I think, customers are looking forward to doing business face to face, taking holidays face to face, seeing friends and face to face. So I think what we are going to see is that there will be a real, real dam burst. And actually, it's interesting in China. We've seen this concept of revenge spend. People coming, rushing back into shopping malls to spend money. The Hermes boutique in China, in Guangzhou recently, when it reopened after being closed for a few months, sold $2.7 million worth of handbags in one day.
Wow.
To one store. Right, that was a record for that shop.
Wow.
That hunger to get out, spend is there.
Totally.
Research says people want to come back. So we're excited about just keeping on, maintaining engagement, being there when customers want to start traveling again.
Wonderful. Well, listen, I certainly can't wait myself, Paul. I think we both share a love of travel as well as a love of loyalty. So I just want to really say thank you so much for your time today. Paul Smitten, CEO of Asia Miles. Thank you so much from Let's Talk Loyalty. This show is sponsored by The Wise Marketeer, the world's most popular source of loyalty marketing news, insights, and research. The Wise Marketeer also offers loyalty marketing training through its Loyalty Academy, which has already certified over 170 executives in 20 countries as certified loyalty marketing professionals. For more information, check out thewisemarketeer.com and loyaltyacademy.org. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Loyalty. If you'd like me to send you the latest show each week, simply sign up for the show newsletter on letstalkloyalty.com and I'll send you the latest episode to your inbox every Thursday. Or just head to your favorite podcast platform, find Let's Talk Loyalty and subscribe. Of course, I'd love your feedback and reviews, and thanks again for supporting the show.